Okay, I think we're just about at the right time, so I will get going, I think. We've just about gone past 20 past. Minor apologies if you came down here at some time today, if you were here at 9:15 for this session or 10:50 for this session. There was some disagreement between various agendas as to when this session was supposed to happen. It is happening now, I can guarantee that. I know that because I'm here. There was some confusion. There was a published agenda and another agenda on the web. They didn't agree, so some things had to be changed. We've changed those things. But thank you for sticking with it, and it's very nice to see you here. If we haven't met, I see one or two familiar faces here already from other sessions around the conference today and yesterday. If we haven't met, I'm Mike Talty. I work for Microsoft in the UK. I'm part of the developer and platform group over there. I have all my contact details up here on the slides. If you want to mail me or tweet at me or go to my website or those kinds of things, those are all there. Feel free to take those down, photograph them, make use of them if I can be of some kind of help to you. And we're going to spend the next 70 or so minutes talking about Azure Mobile Services. And essentially, my idea of this is for somebody who hasn't really seen mobile services too much, who hasn't played with mobile services too much, or hasn't been to one of the other three or four different mobile services sessions at this very conference, because I noticed there's been a few talks on this topic. So that's really what we're going to do. From the point of view of how I'm going to show these things, it would be useful for me to know to what extent you folks are .NET developers. Are you familiar with .NET? Is that kind of what you pretty much do? So if I show an example in .NET, that's going to kind of work for you. Okay. We will be doing a bit of mixed stuff. I've just sent a guy running from the room by saying .NET. Come back. We're going to do some JavaScript too. Come back. We are. Honestly, come back. So we'll talk about this. I will warn you, I have a slight concern that the internet connection doesn't seem to be the fastest thing in the world. We are going to be entirely gated by the speed of that connection, so we will see how that works. And we'll cross a few fingers and see how we go. I'm optimistic, but also realistic. So what's this all about? I'd like to start talks these days with a slide that says, what's this all about? Essentially, just to put this in a nutshell, and I will go through this relatively quickly because I think it's fairly obvious. There are an awful lot of people out there, and I don't think this will surprise any of you in the room, there are an awful lot of people out there using an awful lot of devices, running an awful lot of apps, and an awful lot of people building those apps, perhaps people like yourselves in the room. There's a lot of stuff out there. I put examples of Spotify and Flipboard and Skype on this particular slide, but you can pick your favorite example of a mobile app. Some of those apps are perfectly fine running standalone on a device. You know, you might build a simple puzzle game or something like that. It might run standalone on a device, and that might be great. But a lot of those applications need some kind of presence off the device. They need something up on the web or in the cloud in order to support their application functionality. It might be as simple as something like, I don't know if you've seen on the Windows Phone, a game like Wordament, which is quite a sort of interesting little puzzle game, but has a big online part to it where you're playing against other people around the world and you're doing online leaderboards and those kinds of things. Suffice to say, a lot of apps need some kind of presence in the cloud. I talk about this kind of in two ways. One is that it might be a sort of implicit presence in the cloud. So an example of that would be if you build for the Windows Phone 8.1 or if you build for Windows 8.1, we have something within our application framework where you can just write something as simple as a text file into a folder called roaming. And we will, by default, just roam that to any of your other users' devices where they have the same app. So that's kind of implicit use of the cloud, because all you really did was write a file in a folder, and we did the rest to make that thing happen for you. It's nice functionality, but you didn't have to directly speak to the cloud. And I suppose another example of that would be something a little bit more explicit, where you might use a service like OneDrive. So as it happens these days, you might have built a desktop application 10 years ago on Windows and be running it now on Windows 8.1. And if I save a file from your application into my OneDrive location on the disk, magically that goes off to the cloud and your application doesn't even know about it. It doesn't have to. It doesn't care. But in this particular session, I'm going to be thinking about where you want to interact more explicitly with the cloud, where you actually want to build a service up on the cloud and do something with that. So that's kind of where we're thinking about here. In terms of cloud, and this should probably say Microsoft Azure at this point rather than Windows Azure, but the way that that first word is pronounced up there, window, that's pronounced Microsoft now. So if you could just make that translation in your head, as most of you are probably doing a whole bunch of translations anyway, that's just an extra one for you. Microsoft has a cloud platform. I'm sure you're aware of this being at this event. It's called Azure, and you can pretty much build whatever it is you want to build on it. So I sliced this just a little bit. You can think of this as our infrastructure as a service offering where you take effectively a virtual machine in the cloud and you install whatever software you want on it and you go and play on that box in the cloud, and that's nice. You might take the slice of this which is our platform as a service. So this is where you architect for Windows Azure and you build out web roles and worker roles and make use of table storage and blob storage and queues and those kinds of things. And you can do that kind of stuff as well. In terms of the mobile app developer, that's quite a lot of stuff to get your head around. It's quite a lot of new terminology and things to think about. And perhaps the closest thing to mobile services that we're talking about here, a sort of similar thing in a way, is we have a thing up at Azure called Azure Websites. So if your business is to build out websites, we have a sort of, if you like, almost a packaged offering at Azure for you to build and host websites. You can use things like ASP.NET from us, or you can use Node or Python or whatever you want to use, PHP, whatever you might be, and you can build websites up there talking to SQL or MySQL or whatever it might be. In a way, what we're talking about here with mobile services is a little bit like that, but where you want to build a back end for a mobile application. It's that sort of idea of packaging up functionality. So what I would say, and we can have a sort of debate about this if you want, I think if you want to build an app for a device, typically what you do is you go and get, maybe you get a device or maybe you get some emulators, you download an SDK, you probably get a free tool, and you can start building an app for that device. Whilst it's still difficult to do, and especially difficult to do well, the barrier to entry on that is pretty low. You know, it's not that hard to get started in building a mobile app for a device. Your barrier to entry is quite low. I would argue that barrier to entry on the cloud is higher, especially if you look at, if you look at those sorts of things that we've got for you at Windows Azure, if you have to go and understand things like table storage and worker roles and those kinds of things, it presents a higher barrier to entry than you would have, you know, just building your app out for a device. And what we're trying to do, I think, with mobile services is reduce that barrier to entry, is to make it easier to do some of the things that a typical mobile app developer wants to do in the cloud with their app. So what we're trying to do is reduce this thing down a little bit such that it's not quite so hard to get going with the back end in the cloud. That's really the idea of things, in my view, anyway. What we're kind of doing, if you like, with mobile services, and this is a sort of simplistic view in some ways, is taking some of the stuff that we've already built at Azure. So we've got some platform as a service stuff at Azure. We've got some infrastructure as a service stuff as Azure. Kind of knocking them together a little bit and turning them into a package for a mobile app developer. So kind of taking those two things and building them into a package for a mobile app developer. This is something that you'll see referred to as back-end as a service, or BaaS, if you want to call it that. We are not unique in thinking this way. This is not necessarily something that Microsoft invented. There are other people who provide back-end as a services. People like StackMob or PaaS and people like that, they have similar sort of offerings, and I would encourage you to go out and compare those offerings and see how they work. But we have one of these things with Azure Mobile Services. It's our idea of a back-end as a service. It does the sorts of things that a mobile developer might want to do from their apps. And so, and I think I'm losing my clicker over here, so I'll wander back over here for a second. Probably the primary thing, that the first thing you come across is putting data up there in the cloud. So, hey, I want to store some stuff off my device. I want to store some leaderboards. I want to store some iScores, whatever they might be. I want to store my travel apps, users' favorite locations. Storage is the first and foremost thing that you perhaps think about. As soon as you store stuff in the cloud, you typically then want to think about who's got access to that data. So authentication and authorization kind of naturally follow. And then once you've got data up in the cloud, you might want to do something with that data. So some kind of server-side logic to execute on that data is something that quite naturally follows as well. And then typically at the point where you're doing something on this data in the cloud, you've taken my data, you've put it in the cloud, you're doing something with it, there comes a point at which you want to tell me about something. And the way that we do that with mobile applications is typically through push notifications. And so being able to do push notifications from the cloud is something else that you want to enable for these kinds of applications. It's also handy to be able to do something every now and again, where every now and again might be every day, every hour, every minute, or something like that. So we have the notion of scheduled logic up in the cloud. Every day, pick the lottery winner and let them know they won the lottery, that kind of thing. That involves scheduled logic, it involves data, it involves push notifications, sorts of things that people want to do. And because this is on Azure, we can scale this stuff up, and we've got some stuff around logging and diagnostics for these applications as well. So just to kind of drop this down into four bullet points, really, before we drop off into demos. Mobile services is, in my language, a packaged way to create one of these mobile backends for a particular application. What you're building there is client agnostic. You're building stuff that's accessed with HTTP and by default JSON data, speaks open standards like OAuth 2. You can hit it from any client where you've got an HTTP stack. But we do have specific client SDKs to make life a bit easier for a developer than having to manually create HTTP requests. And we've got SDKs for Windows and Windows Phone and iOS and Android and PhoneGap and Xamarin, and also just for people who just want to build something inside of a regular web page. So we've got client-side SDKs to help with all of those different scenarios. You may never see this, but you probably will as you went along. By default, the backend for your services run on Node.js hosted on a virtual machine in the cloud, and your data is stored inside of a SQL server. You can connect to that SQL server and have a look at it if you want to, or you can ignore it if you want to. It's entirely up to you. You can also build a backend in .NET. So you can build your server side out in .NET and connect that through into your mobile service. That's something that I think is still in preview right now. It's not something I think that we released at Build last week. I think that's still in preview state. But you can build that thing in .NET as well. And then you can set this stuff up from Visual Studio. And in fact, I think today I probably will try and drive this process from Visual Studio. So we'll probably work in Visual Studio to try and do this stuff. And that's probably, I'll show you one or more pictures just a little bit later on, but that's really most of what I've got to say in terms of slides. I will just say that this stuff is live at Azure today. If you're not on Azure, you could take a free trial of Azure, and trying mobile services won't cost you anything as part of that free trial. If you're already on Azure, you can use mobile services. You take the free version up there, and it won't cost you anything to try it out as part of your existing Azure subscription. So to try out mobile services shouldn't be costing you any money, and it doesn't necessarily have to cost you any money as you go live either. There's a free option for mobile services. So if you can stay in that free box, you don't have to pay anything for the stuff that you're running in the cloud. So I think with that, we'll just drop out of slides and so on, and we will test out the internet connection. So let me talk about what we're going to do in terms of a simple sort of scenario here. I've got a scenario that I'll just play with in Visual Studio. Let's open up the solution. And the idea I built out here was, let me show you. This is a Windows 8.1 app. It could equally be a Windows Phone 8.1 app or 8.0. It could also be an iOS or Android app. I'm not so great at building those, so I kind of stay with what I know. But if you're from one of those worlds, absolutely everything we do here will work there as well. Let me just run this up. Let me see if we can run that up. So the idea of this, it's a simple enough thing. The scenario here is the idea of, hey, you might be going out giving some kind of conference talks, a bit like this one. And I might want to build a little database of the conference talks that I've given. And I might want the people who attend those talks, that's you, to be able to vote on those talks so I could see whether I'm doing a very bad job or a good job or whatever it might be. And that's the idea of this screen that we've got as a Windows 8.1 app here. The idea would be that when I run the application, I can hit this little refresh button down here, and ideally, that would go off to the cloud and say, hey, what sessions have we got? But we didn't build this bit of the application just yet, so that doesn't work. And then I could add details of sessions down here like this and say, okay, let me add a new session. But unfortunately, we didn't build that bit either. We can't remove any sessions because you can't create any sessions, so that doesn't work either. We can't log in. And we can't register ourselves for push notification. And because we can't work online, we can't work offline either. So nothing works.
This was what you were good at.
This was
what you were good at, building Windows
8. Yes, I'm very good at building things that don't work. There is one working piece of functionality. This little logo in the top right indicates that we may have an internet connection. It might change if we didn't have one, but we'll see later on. So in terms of how this is built inside of Visual Studio, I've abstracted this down so there's only really sort of two classes that we might need to care about. I have this simple class here called Conference Talk. And the idea of a conference talk, are those fonts big enough for you at the back? Is that okay? Yeah? Okay. So the idea of a conference talk is I decided as a sort of model that we would store an ID. Now, it so happens that mobile services requires you to have an ID on your object called ID. And so that's kind of why that's there. And it becomes a unique identifier, which is why it's a string. A session might have a presenter. It might have a title. It might have a session date. The number of times the session's been rated. So, you know, my session might have been rated 80 times or something like that. And the total score. So if you rate a session between 1 and 5, and everyone gave me 5 out of 5, we might have 400 in that total rating score. And then there's a little version column here, which we'll talk about later on, and an average score. And the average score is just computed by dividing one thing by another. You might notice if you were a little bit sharp-eyed that I have attributed this class to say that it is serializable with the data contract serializer in .NET. I'm assuming that you've probably seen that thing before. You don't have to go this way, but this is the way that I'm going to go for this particular talk. And I'll talk about where that comes in a little bit later on. So that's that. And then I've abstracted the details of how we might talk to the cloud in this session. And I've got a bunch of functions that don't do anything. So I have a function here for when the app wants to get the entire list of talks. It returns a list of talks asynchronously, but right now it doesn't do anything. And if you want to insert a talk, you need to pass me a talk, but that doesn't work either. And if you want to delete a talk, that doesn't work. And if you want to log in, it doesn't work. Register for push notifications. You get the idea. None of this stuff works. And you see where that exception was coming from. Okay, great. So probably what I need to do is start to build out something for us to talk to in the cloud and see how that works out. So let me just close down those various code files there. We could do what I'm about to do from a web browser, but I'm going to try and do this from Visual Studio. We'll try and stay in Visual Studio as much as we can in building this. So let's see how that works. And I can go out to, let me just stop debugging this thing. I can go out to my Server Explorer, and I've associated Visual Studio here with my Windows Azure account, so I can go into my Windows Azure account, and I can see that right now I should have to authenticate. And I should have no mobile services on here, I should have no notification hubs, I should have no SQL databases, everything should be nice and clean. I have nothing here at the moment. So if I want to get started with this, I might want to create a mobile service. And I can do that from Visual Studio by right-mousing here in the Server Explorer and just saying, create me a service. And it pops open a little dialog and says, well, what service would you like to create? I'm going to call this service MT, that's for me, Talks Service. And that means it will be mttalkservice.azuremobile.net. I'm going to put this on a JavaScript backend, hosted in Northern Europe, on a free database, and I'll just enter a username and password here, and send Visual Studio to go create that thing. We'll see how long that takes, because I am a little bit worried we're a bit laggy in our connection, but it looked okay on the Server Explorer, so we'll see how that goes. So what this is doing for me is creating, in this case, I think, a SQL server, a SQL database, a server to sit in front of that and run my web services hosting in Node, and setting that up as we specified on the screen. And I just do that by banging that detail into a dialog inside of Visual Studio.
Could you also link it up to your own SQL server?
Yes, you could, yes. And especially if you went down the road of .NET programmability on the server side. But either way, you could do that. Yeah. We'll let that run through. I don't, off the top of my head, I'm not sure whether there's any limitations around doing this in Express, not that I'm aware of, but the easiest thing would be just to give it a try. I run in Ultimate just because I'm at Microsoft and they let me have Ultimate. Otherwise, I would know the answer to the question. So what this has just done for me is created that mobile service. You can see it here. It's just not really much to show on there at the moment. And what I'd like to do is just show you how this looks in the Azure Management Portal, because you might not want to do this from Visual Studio. If you're an Android developer, you might not have Visual Studio. So let's just right mouse here and jump to the Management Portal. It also lets me know how good or bad my internet connection might be. So we'll just log in there on the Management Portal at Azure. Doesn't look too bad at the moment. And so what we've got here is the one mobile service I just created. Now, if I can just pop back to my mobile services there. What I could have done was created this here via this whizzy little bit of HTML5 stuff at the bottom of the screen where I could create, and you end up in pretty much the same dialogue. So I could have done this from here rather than from Visual Studio. In terms of what we created, shall I just try and zoom this up a little bit for you in the browser just to see how that works out? In terms of what we've created, here's my service. I can navigate in here. And the first thing this gives you is a page where you can download an existing project with the right libraries added to it, already sort of pointing at your service. And you can do that, as you can see, for Windows Store, Windows Phone, iOS, Android, HTML, Xamarin, and PhoneGap. So if you want a quick bit of code that already knows how to connect to your service, you can just download this thing straight away. We're not going to do that here, but we could. What we can then just take a quick look at, if we have a look at our dashboard here, we can see that our service so far has not been very busy. It hasn't been doing anything. That's good because we just created it. We can see how that's been going over the last 24 hours. We can configure something to monitor the endpoint of the service to see if it's up or down. We can configure some options around scaling. We can see again what's been going on the service. There's my database, there's my back end, there's my subscription, there's my URL. And if we navigate, let's just go back to the top here, just to have a quick look at a couple of other sections just for the moment. If we look at this configure section here, again, you will see my database and my SQL server. You can get a connection string and connect SQL Management Studio if that's what you want to do. And importantly for what we do here, there's this option called Dynamic Schema, which we currently have switched on, and we'll explain that kind of as we go along. There's also some other bits here for setting up cross-site sort of scripting things if you were doing web work. And then over on the Scale tab over here, I show you this because this is the area where if you would like to, you can pay Microsoft some money, and we'd be very happy to see your money. That's always good. I'm working within the free version of mobile services here. What it gives me is one virtual machine in the cloud that I share with you, I share with somebody else. I could move away from that model if I wanted to. I could move to one of the paid options. And then I can say I want to automatically scale up between this many servers and this many servers and set up how I want that to work. I'm not going to do any of that in this session. We're not going to do anything that's not free. And so we just keep that. Okay, so that's kind of what we've created and how we could have done it through the web portal. Having got that service created, I probably need to create somewhere. Well, actually, let's add something to Visual Studio so we've got a connection to that service. You can do this in a couple of ways, but the easiest way is to go to your Solution Explorer and to right mouse and add a connected service. So I can tap on connected service and it goes and hits Azure. And it says which service. Well, we've only got one, so that's cool. And we can click OK. It's not really doing an awful lot for us, this particular dialog. What it does do for us, if we go to our application class, what it does for us down here is it adds, and I'll just shorten this for you because it's a bit wordy. It adds a reference to the right libraries for mobile services, and it adds a public static field onto my app class, which I think is a bit ugly, but we will stick with it for the purposes of a demo. It calls it this. I'd rather call it proxy because that's really what it is. And it's an instance of this class called Mobile Service Client. That's really the proxy type for talking to a mobile service. It copied out the URL from the service, and it also spoke to Azure and got the private application key for the service. This is kind of like the weakest sort of form of security in a way. It's not real security, but it's kind of better than nothing. It just is a sort of very limited handshake between the client and the service as a way of identifying the client. We'll make this better as we go along. So that's kind of what we've got there. Let's just close that down. I probably need somewhere to store things, so it would make sense to create a table. And so I can go to my Server Explorer over here, and on this mobile service, I could create a table. And we might call this conference talk, something like that. And I get a set of permissions here as to what I want somebody to be able to do with this particular table. For the minute, I'm just going to say, hey, anybody can do whatever they like with this table. Okay? So, yeah, I think as perhaps the gentleman just realized in the third row here, what that means is that service is now live on the web. It's accessible. You can do whatever you want with that service at this point. You know, if I run up something like, let's just run up PowerShell here. And I've probably got a script, hopefully just kicking around somewhere over here. And so up at the top of the script, there's my conference talk table. It's my service/table/conference talk. And we can use something like PowerShell to just go and do a RESTful GET on that service. And that thing should be live on the web. You know, we should be able to hit this. We should be able to hit that. And it should be hitting that service, and it should be there live on the web. So essentially, you know, within two right mouse menus in Visual Studio, you have a RESTful service live on the internet for people to just generally abuse. It's there, and you're ready to go. And there's no data there yet, but we're live on the web. So obviously the next step would be to make sure we get some data into that service. So let's go back to our code. Let's go back to our Solution Explorer. And what I'm going to do is replace this Cloud Service Access class. I'll just replace the whole thing. So let's get rid of it. And I should have a snippet kicking around somewhere to replace the whole thing. We didn't change so much, really, though, if we take a look at it. What have we got? Let me just change this word here to be proxy, because that's what we called it. So here what I've got is a little static property called TalksTable. And it reaches into the proxy saying, hey, would you give me the table for conference talk? Now, this is only about shaping data on the client side. It's not about networking. It's not about talking to the service. It's just kind of getting ready to talk to the service. And there's two different APIs you can use here. This is kind of a strongly typed API. You could also say app.proxy.getTable called conference talk. It doesn't matter, really. And then you could say, OK, insert something. And that API is going to say, OK, give me a JSON object. Give me something loosely typed. That's fine. I can deal with that for you. I'll send it to the service on your behalf. This API, where we're saying get table of type T, says, OK, if you want to insert something, you give me a conference talk. I'll serialize it to JSON, and I'll send it to the service for you. So it depends how you want to program. You can program strongly typed. You can program loosely typed. You can program both. I don't mind. I'm going to program strongly typed. So just, what did we do there? When it comes time to get all the talks, We talk to the table, we ask it to make a query. I only do this to show you that you can construct client-side queries. They're relatively limited, but you can do it. So I'm ordering by the session date. When we convert that to a list, we'll actually go across the network and get the data, and then we return it back to the app. When you want to insert a talk, you just call insert async, delete async, and we haven't implemented anything else. So we should be able to press F5 on this thing, run it up, and we should be able to refresh, and there shouldn't be any data, unless you added some while I wasn't looking. And we should be able to add, let's add talk number one. That was the one I should have given at 9:15 this morning. Let's go back there and create this record. Talk number one, let's add talk number two, maybe on a different date. And the internet is now so fast that it's really starting to scare me. Yeah, where's this data going? And we got that stuff live in the service, and let's pick one of these records and remove it, and we get rid of that thing. Let's just go take a look at the management portal for a moment. And on the data tab up here, that's okay. There's my table that we created from Visual Studio. And there's the records that we've currently got in the table up there. You'll notice the ID is a sort of GUID up there. You might also notice, if you were carefully watching, that there's three columns at the end of the table that we didn't create. And these are to do with concurrency control and versioning. And mobile services just creates them for you. It's just something that will just kind of happen. So those things have been created up there. So that's kind of nice. And I guess if we went back to our PowerShell client, we could run that and just make sure that some data comes back. And we can see there is data coming back from that service. It's just a RESTful service live on the internet. Having done this, probably the very next thing I would do with it is to stop you accessing it. You know, I've given you access to it. I'm sure you enjoyed that for the 2 minutes that you had the access to it. I would take that away as the very next thing that I would do. And so we can do that. Let's take away the access from this service. Let's go back to the Server Explorer. Let's go up to that table, right mouse, edit permissions, and say, sorry, only authenticated users can actually use this table. Or really, use the services a little bit more accurate. So let's go back to the app. And let's refresh. The service is getting reconfigured. Is at least how I like to think about it in my head. And we are no longer authorized to talk to that service. So we've switched off our ability to be able to talk to that service. So what might be nice would be for us to authenticate ourselves and be able to talk to the service again. For that, we support OAuth authentication. And you can build custom provider for that if you want to. We have built already support for common providers. And those common providers are Microsoft, of course, you would expect, Google, Twitter, Facebook, and also just recently Azure Active Directory as well. So we already kind of have that support sort of there. What I'll do here is I'll authenticate with Google. We'll try Google and authenticate with them. So let's use OAuth to authenticate with Google and see how that works. So what I'll do is pop out to Google's Cloud Console and set up an application over at Google's Cloud Console. That's not it. That's Google Chrome. That's the Google Cloud Console. Oh, you can see I've got lots of projects that Google is going to delete for me one day, but not yet. So let's create a new project. We'll call this MT Talks Service 9. And Google calls that Operating Pact 5353. I quite like those names. I think they're good. We let Google create that project. Doing it. Come on, Google, don't spoil my demo. Now, if you weren't sure what to do next, you could start with a mobile backend starter from Google. Don't do that. No. Carry on doing mobile services. Don't do that. We could go over to APIs over here and credentials, and we could create a new client ID for OAuth authentication. So let's do that. And our URL is mttalkservice.azure-mobile.net. And the callback needs to go into login slash Google. Those are kind of the way that things are set up. Okay, so we create that, and this will give us a bunch of secrets that we can use to identify ourselves. I'm just going to zoom down this browser slightly just to make sure I can copy and paste these okay. So what I need is this client identifier. Let's copy that, and let's pop back over to the Azure Management Portal, and we'll come out of this table and go into our identity over here. And you can see that the settings for Microsoft, the settings for Facebook, the settings for Twitter, and then there are settings for Google and Active Directory. So we can paste this client ID in here, and we can go back to Google and get the client secret. By the way, these are my secrets. I hope you're not writing these things down or memorizing them, because they're purely for me. Oh, and so we can save these things in here. Let's save that. And I think we'll be okay. Did you spot how all those other things were waiting to be deleted? So let's go back to Visual Studio. We've set that up, I think, on the server side. So let's just stop debugging if we are debugging, and let's set this up on the client side. So we finally get to write this login async method over here. So let's write that. And what we'll do is we'll say app.proxy.loginasync with a mobile authentication provider, which is Google. Now, we could await this, we could not await it. That's a philosophical debate. It doesn't really need to matter for what we're doing here. So we will await it, just to take the squiggly lines away. And we'll press F5 and run this back up. And ideally, at the point where we hit the login button, we should use the standard web authentication broker dialog of Windows 8.1 to try and do an OAuth authentication at Google. And I'll log in with my Google account. And it says, oh gosh, it's gone all Dutch on me. I'm sure that I should be accepting this thing. And we're back into the world of Windows, which is back in English. Phew. Windows can remember your OAuth credentials. I'm not going to ask it to do this for me in this particular session. So we should now be authenticated with that service, and we should be able to refresh and get our data back from the service. So we're logged in with Google. The problem with this is that if you and I, or me and Martin perhaps, are using this app, we're both going to input our talks, and we're going to both see each other's talks. There's no notion of who these talks belong to in the server-side data, and so that's not really very good. We should really fix that. So we should do something with that identity on the server side to fix that. And we can do this. So if we go back over to Visual Studio and pop to our Server Explorer, essentially, when you create one of these tables, you get four scripts associated with the table. You get a read script, you get an insert script, an update script, and a delete script. And by default, let's just take a look at the insert script for a moment. You get past the item that's being inserted, the user that's doing the insert, and that object might tell you that the user is currently anonymous if we don't know who it is, and you get the request itself, and by default, we just execute the request. So what we could do is something like this. Let me just see if I've got a snippet for this. Yeah, cool. So as the talk comes into the service, we're logging the title to a log somewhere. And then if you remember, what happened when we sent data to the service was the schema just magically expanded because we've got dynamic schema turned on. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to add another column into the schema if it doesn't exist already for user ID. I'm going to take the incoming user ID and stamp it into the record, just for simplicity, really. The other thing I want to do is I'm adding another column. It might be that I get 500 ratings on a talk, but I've had 10 ratings in the last 2 or 3 minutes, and that might be something that I care about. I might be interested in, hey, your talk's getting rated a lot right now. So I've added this new ratings count, which will currently be 0, but we'll increment it over time. So So let's change this this insert script. Let's just save this. Just let that go up to the cloud. So hopefully we've saved that. And let's go and insert a couple more talks. So let's go back over here and let's add a new talk. I will call this one Fred. Service is having a bit of a think. And we'll call this one Ginger. Okay, so we've created those. Let's go back and look at our data for a moment. Let's go over here and look at our data. Conference talk. And I'm hoping that somewhere in there we have a user ID stamped onto Fred and Ginger. This is a Google token that we got back from our authentication. But the problem is that when I refresh, I'm still getting talks that don't really belong to me. So I should also change the read script as well so that we only bring back the data we want. So let's go back to Visual Studio. Let's go back to the read script. I think I have a snippet that replaces this whole script. This is a little bit more complex, but not really. We get the incoming query. We add a where clause using JavaScript, which is quite interesting. So we say where the user ID matches the current user ID. Execute that query, get some results. And then the next piece of code is just me being a bit neat and tidy. On the server side, I've got a user ID and a new ratings count. I don't see why the client needs to know about that data, so I'm just deleting it off the JavaScript objects before I send it back down to the client. They don't need to know, so I don't send them that data. We just get rid of it. And so we just do that. Let me save that script up to the cloud. Okay, so if that script was saved, then we should only be bringing back my data, or in fact, no data. Or my data. Or my data, good. So we've only got my data up there. The problem I've created for myself here is I've now locked this table down so I can see my records and you could see your records. And you can't get to the records if you've not authenticated. But now you can't rate my session because you can't get to the records. You're never going to get to my records. So this is a problem. We can get ourselves out of this, though. What would be nice, also, in order to rate one of these sessions, you've got to construct a JSON payload and post it up to the record, and that's all a bit tedious. So we could make this a little bit easier by having a custom sort of API that specifically rated a session. And we can do that. So if we wander back over to Visual Studio, we can again go to our service here, and we can right mouse in Visual Studio and create a custom API. So let's do that. We'll call this one rate session. Now, in this particular case, I'm going to be a little bit sneaky. I'm going to use an HTTP GET when I probably shouldn't use an HTTP GET, but it just makes my life a little bit easier for this demo. So we're going to use an HTTP GET. And I'm going to say everyone can do an HTTP GET on this endpoint. Let's create that. And the way that this manifests itself is that it just shows up as another script to run on the server side. So here is that script. And let's get rid of the post because we're not doing any posts. And so we've got a GET which simply returns hello world. So let's save that. And that should be fine for the minute. Let's just let that create. Great. If I pop back over to PowerShell for a minute, I've probably got somewhere down here something that will let me invoke that endpoint. It's my service slash API slash rate session. And if we run that, ideally, it will respond with some kind of hello world. There it is, responding with hello world. So we create an API on the internet very, very quickly. We just right mouse, make an API, we've got it created. But we want this API to rate our session. So let's take a look at how we can change that script in order to rate our session. So instead of this, I have Different script. What is this doing? Well, it's taking the request and it's looking for query string parameters for the title of the session and the rating value of the session between 1 and 5. And then what it's doing, it's building up a piece of SQL to update the table, add some value onto the rating score, increment the ratings count, and increment the new ratings count for a particular title. So I'm assuming that the talk titles are unique, which of course they wouldn't be, but it's easier than using a GUID. And then we simply use the MS SQL module in Node to execute that SQL and send a status code down to the client. So we could save this. Let's save this script. Is that saved? Cool. So let's go back over to PowerShell. And here I've got a little bit of script that rates the session call Fred with a rating of 5. So we could go and invoke that. Let's invoke that once. And let's invoke it a couple more times. So let's invoke it 2, 3, 4 times. So ideally, if we go back over to the app, was it Fred? We're rating Fred. So we refresh that thing. It's got a value of 5, and it's been rated 4 times. So now we've got this endpoint that we can actually use to do something useful. What would be good from... Yeah, we should add some more realistic ratings. I'll put some in and bring it down, don't worry. What would be useful would be, as somebody was rating one of these sessions, would be for me to be able to be notified about the fact that somebody was rating my session, like I just did in that client. I rate. It would be great if I could get notified of that. And the way we do that is via push notifications. If you haven't... Who's registered and set up push notifications before? Something you've done? Okay, 2 or 3 of you. It's a relatively involved thing. I'll show you just a quick picture of how this kind of looks for Windows. So we have server-side support for push notifications for Android devices, iOS devices, Windows 8 devices, Windows Phone devices. It uses a feature of Azure called Notification Hubs, which gives you huge sort of scalability and some quite involved functionality. You get quite a lot of capability from it. It requires an amount of registration. Whoever's push notification system you are using, whether it be Android or iOS or one of ours, you will do some registering because you have to. It's the nature of the beast, really. The way it works is something like this. You have, as on this picture, you have a Windows application on this picture. You've got your mobile service. And in the cloud, we have a push notification service called WNS, the Windows Notification Service, that's living up there in the cloud, waiting to do work on your behalf. And the way it works is that the first thing you do is, on the device, you have to ask for an identifier, which is actually a URI. And on a Windows device, you can have an app with 5 or 6 tiles, and each of those tiles could be a separate notification surface. And they can each be uniquely identified. So what you do is you make an API call saying, give me a URI that uniquely identifies this notification surface on this device for this user. Sorry, for this app on this device for this user. And you get back a big, ugly URI that you then have to do something with. What you typically do with it is send it off to the cloud somewhere to store it. And you could do that with mobile services and store the URI. So Mike is now available on this URI. When you want to send me a notification, what you do is you connect to our Windows notification server in the cloud, you authenticate, which is why you need to register, and then you send the URI and the payload to that service, and it delivers it down to the device. So it's a relatively complex thing, but once you've got it working, it's a good thing to have. And if you set it up manually yourself, you will appreciate what mobile services does for you in this area, because it takes most of that pain away, especially if you use a magic dialogue inside of Visual Studio. So let's take a look at this and see how it works out for us. So let me just pop these slides down for a second. So if I want to do push notifications, what I can do, and this is just one way of doing this, it's not the only way of doing this, I could go to the Solution Explorer and I can add, with a right mouse click, nothing, because I'm debugging. I can go to the Solution Explorer and I can right mouse and I can add a push notification. And it gives you this essay to read, and once you've read that, you can click Next. And then it wants you to sign into the Windows Store. This is because you kind of need an association with an app in the store to do push notifications, but you don't have to publish the app. You just kind of need the association. We may find ourselves, yeah, I thought so, in the world of two-form factor authentication. Bear with me one second and see if I can get a text message on this phone. Without text message, there will not be a push notification. We have a text message. 446. That just to get me into my Windows Store account, hopefully. Great. So what we can do is we could create ourselves an app to play with. So I'm going to create an app called MT Talks. And we'll reserve that name. That would need to be globally unique in the Windows Store. And so now I have this app in the Windows Store. And what that does is it copies a bunch of identity information from the Windows Store down into the local application package. That's really kind of what it does. And then this wizard says, which service are you trying to talk to? And we say, well, it's the service that we've been creating. And then it goes and does a bunch of stuff. What I try and do in a second is walk you through what it actually sort of did for us. That's really the thing I want to show. We just let that thing create. So just to make that point again, you would need to go through that dialogue. You would need to have an account on the Windows Store, but you don't actually need to publish the app at the end of this. When I've done this demo, I will just delete that app off the Windows Store. It will never be published. Oh, we seem to have done some things. Okay, so let's talk about what that just did by closing a few things down. The first thing it did was on my Azure mobile service, if we just refresh this, it created a new custom API called Notify All Users. And what this tries to do is some kind of broadcast to all the users of your application. And I don't want to do that, so my natural inclination is to delete it. That's the first thing it did. So we don't have that anymore, hopefully. I'll trust that that has disappeared. And it has. So we no longer have that thing. The next thing it did was it changed my application class in a way. It was trying to be helpful, but generally speaking, it doesn't really help me at this point, because it puts a second proxy onto your application class, which I don't want, so we'll get rid of that. So that's now gone, and we're back to the proxy that we had before. The third thing that it does for you is it creates this little class over here called pushregister.c#. Let's take a look at that. And let me just shorten a few namespaces for you, because this API is so long as to almost be Dutch. German. I meant German. So what it does is it makes that API call to get a URI for identifying this app on this device for this user. And that's what comes back from this thing. And then what it tries to do is use the proxy to put that up in the cloud. And we're going to get rid of this line of code here. Now, what this line of code here does is it kind of just sends the URI to the cloud. I actually also want to associate that URI with the current user. So I also want to send the current user ID as associated with that URI. So I'm going to pass an extra parameter. You can actually pass any number of tags, but I just want app.proxy.currentUser.userID. So we're now sending to the push notification system in the cloud, here's the user ID, here's the channel. That's what we've done there. Another thing that the wizard does, I think we're on number 4 now, is it goes into your app.xaml class again, and it actually calls that API here. And that's a bit sneaky. It tries to call it when the application launches, but that's not going to work for me because my user isn't authenticated by that time. So I don't want this. So that needs to go. I want to call that function when the user clicks on the button inside the application. So we'll go back to our cloud class that we've been using all along. We'll go down to register for push notifications, and we'll call that function here. It was called We'll call that function there. The last thing I think that the dialog did for me, if we go back to our service in the cloud and have a look at the management portal for a second, and we come out of here for a moment, and we go to the push section here, which I'm going to try and be brave about. It created a thing for me called a notification hub. And if we tap on that notification hub, we might see, you can see some metrics about what the notification hub has been doing. But from our point of view, I want to just move on to this configure tab, where you'll spot that it has configuration for my Windows application. That has been pushed up into the cloud by that dialog in Visual Studio. And if we go back into Visual Studio, and we look at our Server Explorer, we might see here a notification hub. And if we right mouse on that, we should see, this has been configured, I don't know how well you can see that, sorry. This has been configured for Windows notification services. It hasn't been configured for Apple, Google, or Windows Phone 8.0 notification services, but it could be. And you can actually use it to send a notification to all those class of devices in kind of one go, which is quite a fancy thing to be able to do, and potentially hundreds of thousands of those devices. But we've configured it for Windows using just that dialog in Visual Studio. Okay, so I think what we should be able to do then is we should be able to run the app. And we should be able to log in with Google. So now we're logged in and we should be able to get our data, I think. That should come back from the service. But we should be able to register for push notifications. So let's try this button down here. It's not very responsive, it just does what it does. But the idea would be we've now made an association with that notification hub in the cloud. So we could try that out. We could go back to Visual Studio and we go back to the Server Explorer. And one of the nice little features we have here in Visual Studio is this thing to send test notifications. And conveniently, we can do a broadcast to everyone associated with that hub, which right now is me, so that's okay. And we could send a toast notification. And we could try that out. So up to the cloud, back down to the client. So we know that that registration has kind of worked. But what I would like to do is, as we were saying, every so often, I would like to check the data tables, and where a session has been newly rated a certain number of times, I'd like to push notify those people. And that push notify. This is the universal symbol for push notifications. I am broadcasting. And to do that, we need to be able to run some logic periodically in the cloud. So far, we've only run logic as data went to and from the cloud. But, and you can't edit this from Visual Studio, but you can edit it from the portal over here. We can come out of here, and we could write ourselves, our mobile service. We could use the scheduling capability. So we can make a scheduled job. I'll call this notify. And you can run this every so often. For our purposes here, because you don't want to hang around very long, we'll run it every minute. Or you can actually have it just run on demand. If you want, you know, if you're building an app and you just want to pop into the console and press a button, you can have an on-demand script as well. So we can go into this notify script. We can go to the script. And I've got a little script for this somewhere, so let me just find that script for you. Just hang on one second. Pop back to that console. Get rid of this script. And just paste in a new script. Now let's take a look at this script. Is that large enough at the moment, or do you want that bigger? Is that okay? Bigger? Smaller? Please go away. Please stop talking about... Okay. So what is this doing? Well, it's pretty simple. Essentially, it's running on the server every minute. It's getting hold of the conference talk table where a session has more than 5 new ratings. And then for each one of those things, we execute the query, we get the results for each one of those results. And we could do this in a more efficient way, but what we do is we set the ratings count, the new ratings count, back to 0, and we update that table's record in the table. And then I take the user ID, the title, and the total ratings and call this function down here, push notify. It builds up an XML payload, and in this particular case says push.send, here's the user, here's the payload, we're sending a toast. So we could save this. And we could enable it. And I think at the moment, if we go back to the app, the app's just waiting for the service to come back. Okay, so this session here has been rated 4 times. So if we were to go back to PowerShell and rate it 5, 6, we would hope that somewhere in the next minute, that script will kick in on the server side, find that record, find the notification hub, send a push notification down to the device saying, hey, your session has now been rated 6 times. And that's regardless of whether the application's running or not. It's a push notification. So within about a minute, we would expect that something may happen on the screen, or it may not. But within about a minute, you would expect... Somewhere in around about a minute, we would get a push notification from the cloud. Very nice. Thank you. I did nothing. All the work was at Windows Azure. We could rate that a few more times. Let's just rate it another 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We won't wait for that, but let's see if it sends us another push notification in a little while. One of the things that's just recently being added into Azure Mobile Services is the idea that you might not want to always be in a situation where these applications are working online. Everything we've done so far has been online. We've been online all the way through this particular session. So there are capabilities being added to the framework to enable you to work online or offline. And it's not really... It's not a system where you've got some kind of database replication or anything like that. It's a system where the developer's in control of pulling data from the online service, storing it locally, and then pushing it back up to the cloud. And so I can just try and illustrate that for you just in the sort of closing 10 minutes or so of the session, just to show you how that looks, because we don't have to change very much to get offline working here. So let's switch back over to Visual Studio and maybe stop debugging for a second. Now, I haven't shown you this before as we've been going along, but from the start in this project, I already have references for Windows 8.1 to SQLite. So I just have that living around in my project, because the online-offline support that we've got for mobile services on Windows 8.1 is based on top of SQLite. So I just had that in my project from the start. But there's another little piece that I would need to add in order to do online-offline, and we can get that, I think, from NuGet. And it's called mobile services. This guy. Mobile services SQLite store. So this sits on top of SQLite and offers online-offline support for these kinds of applications. So let's install this into the app. Accept the licensing stuff. And hopefully we have that installed. And let me just get rid of this extra reference that shows up. So we've got that installed. What we can do is, if we go back to our Cloud Service Access class that we've been working on all the way along, for quite a while we've had this thing here called initialize local database. We can write that function now. We can actually write that function right in here. I think I called it something like, yeah, that's fine. Let me just resolve these namespaces. It's probably good. So what are we doing? We create an instance of this new thing from mobile services called Mobile Service SQLite Store, giving it a local database name. We make sure that that store has a table shaped like our conference talk table. And then we tell the app's proxy that we've been using all along, if it wants to synchronize stuff, use this store. That's the store for offline working. So that's not too hard. The other thing we need to do is we need to switch the way we work. We can talk both to the online table and to the local table, but I'm going to switch and start talking to the local table. So what I'll do is, instead of saying proxy get table, I can say proxy get synchronized table. And instead of returning an iMobile service table, we can return an iMobile service synchronized table. And that's the change that we need to make there. The only other change we need is the call that synchronizes what's in the cloud with what's on the local device. And we have a call for that somewhere here. Sync async. Yeah, I know, when you start to write a function called sync async, it may be time to have a bit of a rest. What this thing does is we can then say, okay, let's wait, app.proxy, oh, sorry, no, talks table dot pull async. And when you pull data from the cloud, if you have any local data that needs to go to the cloud first, we automatically push that up to the cloud first. So these are our changes. Let's press F5. And we will log in. Let's log in for a moment, because we are online at the moment, and we'll need that in a second. And we could get our data. And it's an interesting thing, because we connect and get our data, but we won't get any data. Because we're not talking to the cloud anymore, we're talking to the sync table in the SQLite store. So in order to get that data, we'd have to sync. And so we could sync, and then we could talk to the table. And our table's there in that local store. And so naturally what we'd want to do now is take this thing offline. Whether we'll ever get it back online, I don't know, but we can try. So if we take this thing offline, ta-da, that little icon in the top right should change, just to say we're offline. Yeah, take this thing offline. not sure what to do with that. So what we should be able to do is continue to add talks. So let's add a talk. Let's add. Oh, I tell you what. Let's press this button. Switched off the Wi-Fi. So okay, we're not connected to anything, we think. So let's, and actually, if you've been here for the 2 days, the Wi-Fi doesn't work anyway. So let's say offline talk number one. Let's create that. Oh no, it's okay. Offline talk number two. Let's create that. And hopefully what we could do is go back on the network. No Wi-Fi up my sleeves. No working Wi-Fi anyway. Wait for that thing to think it's got a network. It thinks it's got a network. Let's see if we actually have a network, because you know what networks are like. They're funny things. We seem to have a network. Okay, so let's go back over to the app. So we should be able to sync. Let's try syncing. So that data should be in the cloud. Let's go to the cloud. To the cloud. Over here somewhere. And so somewhere in our data, we should be able to see whatever it was we just created. Offline talk one and two should be somewhere in here. Offline talk one and two. So that works quite nicely. We can just get that data down. It's within your control as a developer. Just go online, offline. All kind of works quite nicely.
So it basically executes the JavaScript locally as well,
then? No. So the JavaScript will get executed at the point where the data goes back to the cloud. And it's important to realize that that online, offline support is simply hitting the services that you've built. It doesn't go round them straight into a SQL server or anything like that. So in our case, when we pulled the data offline, we would only get my data because it's going through the read script on the cloud.
And your local ratings wouldn't do anything then,
probably. Local ratings wouldn't do anything. Well, that's only happening at the point where you actually post back to the cloud. Yeah, so it's just using the service when it's available. Yeah?
Does this work with dynamic schema?
Question was, this work with dynamic schema? And the straight answer off the top of my head is, not sure, I haven't tried it. that would be a thing for me to try. I'm not sure whether that works, expanding your schema on the client and then sending changes to the service. But I would think that we will try it. I don't know off the top of my head on that one. It's worth saying that online offline support is not there for all platforms yet. So this is new and it's just been added quite recently. In fact, it was added at the time of build the week before last, I think. But it's there for Windows and I think Windows Phone. I'm not sure that it's there yet for Android and iOS, but it's something that's coming. And with that, I'm pretty much done. I hope that you found that useful and got an idea of what mobile services can do for you. We spent about 70 minutes. We built a service in the cloud. We stored some data in it. We had logic running as data went to and from that service. We authenticated with OAuth using Google in this particular case. We built logic that ran periodically looking for data and sent push notifications down to the device. And we also did a bit of online, offline as well. So that's a reasonable trip around what mobile services can do. You can, and I want to point this out, we worked in JavaScript on the back end. You can also build a .NET back end, and you can use web API, and you can marry up your services in the cloud with a web API back end that's talking to your database using whatever it is to talk to your database. So that's something else you might want to check out. Somebody asked me about that just yesterday here at the conference. The other thing I'd say is if you want to know about this stuff, windowsazure.com/mobile. Just go to windowsazure.com/mobile. They have tutorials and walkthroughs for all of the stuff I just showed you, I think, including online, offline. Yeah, they do. And those tutorials are step-by-step. They're really good. They show you how to register OAuth for Twitter and Google and Facebook and those kinds of things. And there are tutorials up there for iOS and Android and Windows Phone. So you get a good spread of different technologies in those tutorials as well. They're really good walkthroughs, so they're worth having a look at. We're pretty much done. Thanks a lot for coming along. I hope you found it useful. There is a slide, I think, to say you should rate the sessions. And you shouldn't. You should not rate the sessions because apparently you can't do that anymore.
I was just trying to do that and it says the page not found anymore. You can only evaluate the whole event now.
Okay, well, whatever you can evaluate, you should evaluate. And you might win a prize, but don't hold me to that because that's what it says on the slide. So again, thanks for coming, and I hope to see you again in the future. Thanks a lot. Feel free to mail. Thank you.